I'm Margaret Kelsey.
And I'm Devin Bramhall.
And this is Don't Say Content,
a show created in partnership with Share Your Genius. 2 minutes late is basically on time. Oh, by the way, we are live.
I know. I saw the sneaky mid-conversation go live.
Yes.
That's how we like to do it with guests, really. We just like to throw them in, surprise them. By the way, we're live.
Yeah. I'm sorry for being late is like my new thing. It's like 2 minutes late. I think for me, it's like 3 minutes or less, you're on time.
Yeah.
4 minutes, you're like, ooh. You know what I mean?
5 or 6, I'm like, are they coming?
I don't wait. I only wait until 10 if it's like a client or a sales prospect.
Yeah.
And I'm only doing it because of that. Like that's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I just don't have any time.
I have one client that I won't name, but if I'm a minute or two late to a call, I get a Slack like, you joined in this one. I had to go get a glass of water, you know?
Yeah. Like, hi, don't be extra. Nobody's got time for extra. Rachel, I feel like this is the thing I love being doing these with you is that you're like perpetually our producer. Do you know what I mean? You're like mom. You're just kind of like, I know more than you and I will lead you to like Mecca or whatever. And so like even just like watching you listen to us, it feels like you're just like, oh, my little children, you're so silly.
No, not at all. I read a quote though this morning that was like, great conversationalists give space. And so I'm just giving you space and I'm listening and I'm absorbing.
Uh-oh, because we're going to need you to talk on this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We really do. Okay, so by this one, Margaret means we are talking today with Rachel Downey, who is the founder and CEO of Share Your Genius. They are not just a podcast company. They are a relationship building, brand building, revenue growing organization that leverages the new content marketing that is media to help folks spread their ideas, build an audience, and create affinity around their brand. I made all of that up. I need you to know, like,
right now.
I was listening really intently. I was like, what is she going to say?
I made it up. Did I get it? Did I kind of get it?
I like it. There's some pieces in there I need to reuse. Yeah. That was great.
Well, we're recording this, so don't you worry. Exactly. We'll have the recap.
So she also produces our show, as you should all know by now. And we are talking about something that we've talked about before, but in a new way.
Devin's giving herself time to go back and find what the topic
is. I honestly don't remember what it is. I'm not going to lie.
I knew it.
I wrote like a very specific and eloquent description. And I'm like, where is that? My brain's not here.
Do you need me to produce right now?
Yeah. I'm like, who am I? Why am I here? Okay. So we're talking about marketing, the new sort of the evolution that marketing is currently going through, and how new mediums, formats, platform, whatever. Multimedia is a thing. Humans are too. And we're here talking about how those two things together are changing inbound marketing to bring it back to actually the early days of like community management, when it's all about relationship building and not so much about this factory line that is a funnel and clicking, categorizing people into cohorts. So, and I think the reason why this is so interesting to us is because this type of work has always been the thing at companies that feels unscalable. It feels like it will take a huge investment. It feels impossible, and they don't know how to leverage it or tell the story around how it contributes to growth. So, given that the world is just like trying to drag companies along, B2B companies, this is something that B2C, as they are always ahead of B2B, like they already get this. But I think human beings are like trying to drag these companies along. Like buyers are like, remember, like I'm not responding to a lot of this old stuff. I need new stuff. And so, you know, talking about the business of building relationships at scale. So did I get that? Does that make sense? Oh, thank God. Somebody replied and they get it. Oh, thank you. Is it Jakob or do you pronounce it Jacob? I don't always know, but thank the heavens for you. Agree. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Oh wait, we already have a question. Do you want to just start with that? Rachel, I would like to pose a question to you from Luke, which is, do you think B2B podcasting is better for audience growth or peer-to-peer networking?
So ultimately it comes down to the outcome you're looking to achieve. So are you trying to use your show for peer-to-peer networking, or are you trying to use your show for audience growth? And then you determine the right route for you and your brand and your company. So I feel like that's not a good answer, because I think there's a question you have to ask yourself first before you can even answer that question. But I think at the end of the day, when you think about creating content, and specifically, like, let's go podcasting in its most infant form is conversations. And so if you just started with, I want to have really great conversations with people that I want to learn from, and the people that you want to learn from could be internal stakeholders, that could be people that are your peers that you want to learn from, it could be from customers or whatever. It's like, that could be like net success of like, I am spending my time as a marketer wanting to talk to these people anyway, I might as well record it.
I love that. And I think too, Rachel, something that we've talked about before is like the initial stage of your podcast goes to your owned community already, like the community that already follows you, the community that knows you, and then it can like start to spread, right? But it's like the initial thing isn't necessarily audience growth. It's like audience engagement of the audience you already have. And then it kind of naturally can spread through additional channels, but that growth can be slow sometimes. And so I think that mixture of both of them can be really helpful of saying, hey, we know audience growth will slowly pick up, but in the near term, like, let's do some peer-to-peer connections and make sure we're measuring success on that as well.
Well, those peer-to-peer connections is building relationship, right? And then, yeah. And so I think that's where you start to get that point of, I am actually doing the thing that I wanted to do anyway. And when it comes to like building a media strategy, and we can start with podcasting just to keep it simple, because that's my domain of like expertise, but I really bucket it in one of like three phases of where you're at. So like phase one is create, which is like, what the heck are we saying? How are we saying it? What is the format in which we should be communicating it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, you live in that create phase for a little bit, until you kind of get your sea legs, if you will, on like what you're developing and who it's for, frankly. And then you go to what I call like the optimize phase, which is where you start to take that distribution of like first approach. It's like, how am I using this across multiple platforms? Who are the right people I should be talking to? Who are the people who can help me scale this? Like thinking about it from that perspective. And then you kind of get the opportunity to earn that audience growth because you've done those phases. So to me, it's create, optimize, grow. And based on where you're at is what you should be focusing on.
Yeah. We always try to grow first, right? I feel like that's such a marketer thing of like, grow, grow, grow.
100%. 100%. It's like, you're not ready. You're not ready.
Yep. Yeah. Just make the thing first. Play around. Play in the sandbox. And I think that's something that you've been so good at encouraging Devin and I to do over, I mean, it's been almost a year and a half now. But it's like, just play in the sandbox. See what it is.
Yes. Do you see that? Do you see my contribution to this so far? Did you see like my weird face I was making? I'm like trying to manage comments, and like this is the same time. So I'm like,
just got the fake smile plastered on your face.
I think that's like a really interesting point though, Margaret, and like Devin, I'd be curious your perspective, because I do feel like you've had tension there of like wanting to grow from the jump. And it's like, hold on. Yes, let's get there. But like, how have you navigated that? And like, how would you advise the people tuning in today?
I am so glad that you asked me that question, because I was just talking to a friend of mine this morning about that, how I can't help but attempt to ruin everything I do by removing all joy, because my like competitive, like, you know, brain gets really excited and she takes up a lot of space, and then she makes me miserable. And I think I want to quit the project, when really it's probably, I need to quit myself a little bit. stop being me so much. So yeah, that was a big challenge for me in the beginning, that Margaret and you
in the really beginning, like throughout, there's been like, I feel like it's been like this, where what actually happens is, and I'm not being mean. No, I'm not being mean. I'm just pointing out it definitely was at the beginning when you were like, grow, when we were still sandboxing. And then there's been various times where I've even recognized that about Devin. I'm like, you're not having fun anymore. You're so focused on like channels and growth and like that mindset that we're like forgetting what this was for us. But also I'll caveat that like, we are not using it in a traditional like B2B sense of, I mean, we're building relationships at scale, but like the majority of our podcasts are just Devin and I, right? So it's more like that relationship that you don't even see being built, of the listeners listening and then us hearing it almost like way later of like, oh, we listened to that episode or we loved that conversation. And I feel like that is like the natural tension that happens when you choose podcasting as one of your media outlets, as your strategy, is like you don't have that quick of a feedback loop that you have in other content programs of being able to see so much consumption metrics and exactly where they're coming from and et cetera. It's like it's a little bit of shouting into the void and hoping that your message is resonating. And I think that that natural like tension of not really knowing if it's working, then you can go into overactive growth mode, because you're like, well, then I need to grow it more because I like don't know if I have control over how this thing is spreading and growing.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yes. I think the hard thing about podcasting when you're doing it for work purposes is that you both need to make the podcast, like what it takes to make the podcast great is doing it for the sake of the content itself, right? Like you have to be obsessed with the content itself in order for people to care enough to want to listen. And it's like, how do you both do that and put parameters around it that contribute to your business goals? And we have had the luxury to not have that constraint. I have artificially created it at times. And I think where I'm beginning to enjoy it more is when people started, like, I think it was around January. It's like when we weren't doing the podcast at all of a sudden people started like organically following us and like, you know, kind of popping up. And so I think now that people are engaging more, I'm starting to see, like, if I were going to do the podcast again, like start it again, my objective would be like, how can I get people to engage with us for no other reason than like it's motivating. And I think if you're doing it from a company standpoint, there's value in focusing on that engagement. And so, and like, I do think we did a lot. We did try some stuff early on around like asking people to submit stories, asking people questions. And I think another reason why this era of relationship building is so much more, is working over other things or working more than some other things for certain companies right now, is because people don't want to, like, they're not going to just contribute to get their voices out there. It's like we're moving to this like other era of influencer where it's not just being out about being out there. People want to feel connection. And so like they're now sharing a lot. Like, I think this is the most people have. Wait, we have so many great. Oh, hi, Katie. This is our Katie. And she, as always, Katie, thank you. So yeah, I think that's like a big, and I think that's like an important part of Like, I know someone who works at a company where the CEO wanted a podcast and they put out the podcast and he's not invested in it. He was just invested in doing it. And thus it's not getting a lot of attention and it's wasting a lot of time versus like, we really poured our hearts into this and thought about it a lot and cared about it and cared about the people we're talking to. And I think that's starting to show.
Yeah. And I think that that tension of like when you're doing it in a business context, any content program, you have to always like, what is the business need and what is my audience need? And you find that commonality. Like Devin and I were able to play in a space of like, we don't have a business need. It's just like, what would we want? Right. Like, how do we create a show that we would want to listen to? And so we didn't have, to Devin's point, that constraint, which I think was really helpful to be able to stay in that place of just play and listen to our own intuition on what we wanted to create and the rabbit holes and the conversations and the topics. We didn't have to then run it through like a keyword analysis of like, is this interesting to my target audience?
Yeah.
Although Devin tried to do that a couple months ago. Yep.
But I think that's the importance of anchoring back on where you're at in terms of your show. Like, what phase are you in? And then attach and the right expectations to your stakeholders based on where you're at. And yeah. I think that the true metric of success for a show at the end of the day, video, podcast, the ancillary content that comes from it is audience engagement. And like, that is the core metric of what you're trying to do. Because at the end of the day, if we're talking about relationships, like this, like success for me is like, I want to be able to call Devin and Devin picks up. You know what I mean? And like when I need a favor or like I need her to look at something, you see what I'm saying though? Like we need to build a relationship. And it's like, who are the relationships that your company needs to build? Like,
yes.
Like who are those people? How do you do that? Like it's staying in front of them. It's staying connected. It's like that is the true metric of success is like, if I call you, will you answer or will you call me back?
That became one of my goals this year when I was coming back out and I was like, okay, what do I want to focus on? And my first, I used the word fame at first, not because I wanted to become like this big celebrity, but because I was feeling like I want to show up in more places, right? Yeah. And I very quickly realized that that wasn't right for me. And I changed it to influence because I was like, I don't like the hamster wheel of like, proving that I'm valuable because of how many people follow me. Like, it just doesn't feel fun to me, but I love like Rachel, when people call me on the side or like, I need this, I need to hire someone. And then I have a friend who's like, you know what I mean? Like I'm like the new job matchmaker and I get to see people happy all the time. Like, I love that. I love when you, Rachel, call me and you're like, hey, can you help me think through this thing? Like, and people do remember that. And I've benefited from that from a business standpoint. And I think that there's a lot of different, I think we should talk about this for a second, like the different ways that podcasts show up can be utilized for the business context, because I've seen some really interesting use cases. But Regan just asked a really interesting question. So I think we should all give our takes on this because it might be different and I'm curious. So do you think people either have it or they don't with being expert relationship builders / community people? I ask because I don't think every professional has that innate authenticity. Best community people I know genuinely care about the relationships they build. I'll start really quick because I have just a couple of really short thoughts. But one, it can be learned, and I've seen people learn to build community around them. In fact, I was just with one of them last night. And I was remarking on how quickly she had skyrocketed her career, her agency. And when I had met her, she wasn't, you know, she hadn't cracked that nut and she put a lot of attention into it. On the other hand, I've also worked with a founder who is incredibly genuine, passionate, devoted, like one of the most earnest founders, agency founders I've ever met. And he struggles to sell. Like right, that was an area where he's like, you know, and I see why, but it doesn't really reflect his insides. And so again, it's like, so I think it's like, I do think that anyone who wants to build community can, because now there's so many different opportunities for building community for different types of people and where they get energy. And some professionals need to work on it if it's not organic to you, you need to work on it a little bit, but I think it can be done. Rachel.
I think that some people don't have it when it comes to being a host of a show. So if you think about using like a podcast as a vehicle for building that community and deepening relationships, there is a talent there that some people do or don't have. And I think there are things they can learn to get better. But there are some people that's just like, you don't want them on the mic because they don't represent the brand in the way that you want them to. You might want them to have those genuine conversations and help you create the content because they are experts and they know their stuff. But not all people need to be on the microphone.
Yeah. And I think of it in terms of like, okay, relationships and community is about giving more than you get, right? Especially in the immediate and near term, and having the bandwidth, first of all, having the curiosity to understand what somebody might need, right? Like preempting that and like building a relationship of like showing up and helping them out first. You have to have the natural curiosity to do that, which might be able to be learned, but you also have enough emotional bandwidth that you can give before you have an ask. And I think that that's tough for some people too. So I would say that it's probably a spectrum, and there is a cusp on that spectrum of like not going to be able to figure it out, but most people can get better at it and start to understand it and start to see the value of like, okay, I did these things. I played the long game here and it worked out. And I think that there are some people that just would have a trouble like switching into that mindset of like, this is a long game. This is not transactional. This is not a quick win. This is something that I'm going to invest in over time that I know is going to create some returns.
To that end, we have a lot of questions in here, y'all. I am like,
I know.
this is awesome. No, I love this. This is great. So I'm just going to keep it moving. So Luke, I love this question. How do you define a great episode? Rachel, do you want to, I feel like this is a good one for you to start with.
I feel like Luke's going to hate me because the answer is what's the outcome? Like, what's the goal? Like, so one of the questions I always ask our clients in the kickoff phase is I'm like, how do you want your audience to feel after they've listened to an episode? How do you want them to feel? And if the answer is, you know, inspiring, well, did your episode leave them inspired? The other thing is like, I always say a great episode is something that you want people wanting more from you, not less. And so if we want to get like real brass tacks with it, if your consumption's really low consistently, then like, it's not a good episode. It's not good content. So always leaving people with wanting more. Did you accomplish the feeling that you wanted them to have? And then is it like from a technical perspective, does it sound okay? You know what I mean? Like, can I hear you? Can I see you? Can I feel you?
It matters, right?
It matters. Yeah.
Margaret.
I'll take just a different way of answering it, where like personally, when we know we've created a great episode, it's the anecdotal feedback of like the thing I'm always looking for in lots of pieces in my life, but particularly the podcast, is when people reach out and say, I felt that way. I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to say it. And like, I listened to that podcast and it was everything I've been thinking and everything that I like didn't have the words to be able to describe. And I feel like not alone, right? Like that to me is the best feeling in the world. When I get those text messages, I'm like, that was a damn good episode. And they tend to actually come from the ones that like Devin and I have not pre-planned. And it'll be like something where we're like, let's scrap the one that we were supposed to record this week. Like, I'm fired up about this thing. And I think that it's like our natural passion of the topic like flows through into that episode. And that's what creates a great episode.
I'm not going to lie, Margaret, that nails it for me. In the beginning, I was more concerned with the perfection of it. Because I'm a perfectionist, in case that wasn't already clear. But where I got to and where I started to find joy in it, more joy that, you know, it's like, was exactly that. It was just like people saying, holy shit, you made me feel seen. And that's been kind of the case my whole life. I feel like I didn't mean for this to happen, but I sort of became known as the person who just like says the quiet part out loud all the time. And so I've gotten that feedback a lot over my life. And now that I'm a little more, I've evolved in my life to a place where I'm more confident in myself and less worried about what other people think of me. it makes me even happier to hear that. It's like, oh, wow, there was a time when I really needed to feel seen. And I feel like that's not a helpful answer, though. Like, I think it's like, yeah, it's like, Rachel, like, you nailed it. You're like, this, what is the, why, what is the meaning of this? Why are we here? And
it's my question.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, well, there's two things that are really important here. One is you two just backed up my entire proof, because if I go like peek my notes, I guarantee that the words I wrote down, because as you're talking, I was like, what did they say when we asked that question? Mm-hmm. And I could almost guarantee it was like, not alone. They wanted a sense of like community. They wanted to help people coming up or figuring out where they're at, where they wanted to go. You literally answered that question back to say like, how do I know it was a good episode? It's like when people tell you that. So yeah, that is like a no-brainer. And then I lost my train of thought, but that's like, it just cemented that, like, if you want to know what a good episode is, go back to what is it that you wanted them to feel, and did it accomplish that?
Yeah. These questions are transitioning very well into the next one. I love how they're like, there's a harmony here. So, Jakob questioned, or asked, so how would you think about audience engagement? How would you measure it for a podcast that's not streamed live? Fair.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I saw Will peep in there. Will's an amazing practitioner, and he's an amazing host of his podcast. So you should look at how he measures it as well. But how would you measure audience engagement outside of a podcast? Well, for us, our tagline is it's never just a podcast. So that you should not just measure the channel itself as success, because to your point, you're not going to get much engagement metrics, but the things that you will see that help you understand what the performance looks like is time spent with your brand. So you can measure that based on consumption, based on the hours streamed, downloaded, etc. And then I would be looking at the channels where I'm distributing the content that gets created from the podcast. When I post content like a clip from my podcast episode and I put it on LinkedIn, does that get more engagement than something else? 9 times out of 10, the answer is yes, it does drive more engagement, because more people are more natural and authentic when they're talking and in conversation, which is a lot of people's primary use of the podcast channel. So hopefully that's helpful. There's some more we can break down, but that's the high level.
There's sort of a follow-up there from Allie. Hi, Allie. Do you try to break down the goals on each episode more specifically? As in, this episode didn't get a ton of comments on social, but it got a bunch of listens, et cetera.
No, because that feels futile. Like I like to think about it like great marketers, great media practitioners, great creators are entrepreneurial. So they are like ready, aim, fire, go. And so what I mean by that is like, they need to look at the holistic channel and say, is this worth my time, effort, and attention? If I were to go for every single little episode, every single time, and have KPIs associated every single episode, I'd get burnout on the channel really, 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 really fast. So I would want to look at it over the course of more of like a campaign mindset. So over the course of a quarter or a batch of episodes, or what else did I do that integrated this content into my overarching strategy to assess whether or not this was the time, value time that I should have spent on this channel.
Yeah. I go back to like, we had one episode that I got really spicy at about the difference in measuring like brand and relationships over conversion. And the idea is that we try a lot of times to measure these like brand channels, these relationship building channels on conversion. But it's really helpful when you're measuring conversion to know what that like inciting incident thing was that got somebody to convert. But brand and relationship building is not about that. It's about the longevity and the touch points over time. And so it could be that one episode resonates more or one topic resonates more, but it's about the fact that you've shown up consistently and repeatedly, and then you've been, you know, and I think that time spent with the brand is a great metric there, because if it's going up over time, it's like we're clearly hitting this resonating point, but we're also producing enough and in a cadence of production that we're showing up, and those touch points over time will warm enough people up that they'll answer our call, that they're going to know who we are, they know what we stand for. And so it again, it's like, it's not that like there's the one thing that actually gets somebody to convert, which it's helpful to know that when it's a conversion channel, but like we have to measure this thing differently, because we'll throw the baby out with the bathwater if we're only trying to measure it on conversion.
Yeah. That was true. Animals. We like Jimmy when he was running sales and marketing. He started a podcast, like the Animals podcast, talking about content marketing. And it wasn't a highly produced show, right? Like we, first it was just him on the mic, and then I think he would bring in guests, and then Ryan and I took it over at one point. And after a little while, it started showing up in sales calls. Oh, I listen to your podcast. Mm-hmm. Oh, I read your blog. Like that was, and when people ask me, like, how did Animals become the agency that stood out? Like, what did you do? And I was like, we were very, very opinionated, and we shared those opinions on our blog and our podcast and out in the world. And that's what built us that credibility, that trust. And when we started seeing it up, even anecdotally, it wasn't like we weren't measuring it, but people would mention it. Oh, I heard, you know, I listened to your podcast up, and this thing you talked about really, you know, spoke to me. We could see that, like, oh, even though we don't have a graph saying exactly how many leads we got from the podcast, we knew anecdotally that it was helping bring in new business. And that was like, we decided that was enough.
But that's okay. Hard too. If you don't have a leadership team that's naturally aligned to that ability to be like, yeah, we can just see it anecdotally and we'll be fine investing in this thing for a long time. And so Rachel, I'm sure you come up with like against that in sales processes and things of leaders that want to measure it on leads and conversions and bottom of the funnel stuff in a short period of time that you know it's not going to be possible. Like, how do you deal with that?
Well, another thing I wanted to say, and I'll answer your question, and then I'm nervous about what I'm going to say because Will's a client and we've had this conversation quite a bit. So now I'm like, what do I say here? But I will say, like, great marketers are great business-minded people, and great business-minded people notice patterns. And so it's your job as whatever role you're in, but let's say you're creating the show and on our side of the house, like it is our job to go back to a client and say, we're noticing these patterns. These are the things that you should be paying attention to. This is something people are interested in. You know what I mean? And so that's a critical piece of understanding the success of your show and like where to go from there. So when it comes to how do you have that ROI conversation with stakeholders, I constantly am asking my clients, what do they care about? What matters right now for the quarter? What are the strategic initiatives for your organization right now? What is the CEO asking you for? And then we say, how does your show support that or not? And it is never just a podcast. So I am never saying that it is our job to equip you with all of the information to secure this. It is part of the holistic understanding of how we're using this to strategically achieve your goals. So we will look at your downloads. But again, downloads are an indication of reach, not complete performance success. You know what I mean?
Resonance. Not even resonance.
No, not even. And then we are going to look at consumption. When people show up, are we getting their attention? Are they sticking around? Are we seeing subscribers go up over time? Those are indicators that people are paying attention to this channel and that it should stick around. Then on the other side, though, we're looking at how are you using the show itself? How are you using the channel? Are you using it for strategic conversations with your clients? Are you using the show as a strategic opportunity to get your thought leaders out into the world? Like, there's so many questions that we would have to ask. But if somebody says I need a direct ROI, then I would say this isn't a demand gen channel. So don't play here.
I going back to the words and stuff. Yep. Here we go. Going back to what we wanted to talk about earlier around, like different ways to use the podcast in business. And I have heard, I know a few companies that use their podcast as a biz dev tool by bringing on guests from companies that they want to connect with. And it has this, it's networking, it's like relationship building by having these deep conversations with them and really preparing for the show, like showing up, having deep conversations, connecting with that person. And I know that it's worked really well for them as a biz dev tool, both like, but they attach two success metrics to it, because it's both building relationships, you know, not just like adding more followers, but build like having more relationships with people and having some of those translate into sales conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I would caution there is a couple things is like, if you're creating the show as a vehicle to start a conversation with somebody who could potentially buy from you and you're banking your success on that, I would not do it because people are, that's an old tactic of a thing that has happened for a long time. And people aren't doing the due diligence of making sure it's a good show in and of itself. Yeah. And so people just come on and it feels very much like, oh, they just wanted my time so that they could tell them all about their business. So I would just say, like, I think it can be a secondary benefit 1,000%. But make sure that you're being genuine in the relationship building and that you're not going into it with an outcome in mind, because people can see that, they can feel it, and they can tell based on how it's even getting produced.
Yeah. I will say that they had me on their podcast before I knew them very well. And it was like one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had on a podcast ever. Like the questions were just like nuanced and deep. Like there was no surface level conversation. I don't know why I'm trying to give credit to a company that I'm not going to name.
That's perfect.
Did a good job.
That's a perfect example of how to do that, though, because they're saying this is a bridge for me to create a meaningful relationship with this person, but I'm not attaching the outcome of the success of Devin's going to buy from us. Yeah. Instead, it's like I'm creating a really great show that is I'm going to have my ideal client on and we'll see what happens. But it was a great brand experience that they got from me, not this is a sales call. You see what I'm saying? That's like the difference of like, it has to be an extension of the brand experience and you can definitely use it strategically. Please do. But it's just knowing the difference and some brands aren't taking the time to do that.
Wait, so and, what? Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say just like way, way back in the day at Envision, it wasn't a podcast, but we had this like inside design series and we made sure that this like blog series was like so beautiful. We would send out a photographer to these designers' spaces, to their offices, do like a full like look at their office, look at their desk, look at them working, look at this. We like made them look so special. And we did that for like specific people that were either customers or like ideal customers, but the end product looked so good that there was so much inbound interest to like have that, like have people featured. They're like, can you feature me? Can you feature me? So it was both like inbound, but then because there was so much inbound, we could say like, oh, you're on the list. And like, there would be a long list of like people that kind of we never got to. And then we could go out and like proactively pitch it to the folks that we really wanted to like get the door in. But like the only reason why it worked, to your point, Rachel, is because the end product was like actually, I hate using sexy in a business context, but it was like a sexy ass content feature. You know what I mean? So people actually had the desire of like, I do want to be featured in that.
Yeah.
And like, that's the piece that I think a lot of people miss when they try to do like the Trojan horse sales biz dev content series.
I like that Trojan horse sales.
Yeah.
So what are other, maybe it might be worth Rachel, like sharing other, like when, you know, I don't remember who asked this, but when they asked about like, what makes a great show and you're like, whoa, hold on a second. Like, what is your objective with the show? What is your, why are you doing it? Do you have like some examples of different reasons why folks started a podcast and like what the success of it was? Like, why was it? I almost want to show it's like, okay, sure, it depends, but like, you know, we just found one example that like both works and doesn't work, depends on how you execute it. It's like, are there others like that where you're like, oh, here's an example of somebody who wanted to do X and like, I don't know.
Yeah. So there's a lot of use cases. I think in general, 9 times out of 10, when I'm talking to prospects or clients and I'm like, why do you want to do this? They're like, brand awareness. I want people to know more about our brand. I also want to create a content flywheel. And I think the other thing that people consistently want to do is they want to tap into their genius, like their company's expertise. And most people are better in conversation. Like we just are. And so a really easy way to do it is to just record it and do it on purpose. And so that's like, that's kind of like baseline of like, I'm showing up to the party because I want to accomplish those things. Yeah. And then you can get super strategic with what you do. Like we have one client who they're like new to the marketplace, I would say. They're trying to build, establish themselves. And they have a CEO who's just like an insanely smart human being and like has an insane rap sheet in terms of like what he's accomplished in his life. He doesn't have a lot of time. And they're like, how do I get this guy's genius out into the world so that we can get our content out there, get a brand lift, all that kind of stuff. And oh, by the way, you get him for like 2 hours a month tops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, what are we going to do? So what we actually did in that scenario is we partnered. They were lucky in that they had a talent in-house. And a lot of people have talent in-house that they haven't tapped. But they had somebody in-house who could actually serve as like what we would call like a producer or like a journalist. And so their show is all based on more of a story arc. So it's based on like doing little series based on topics that align to the campaigns that they're like getting ready to launch to, or it's trending news that they can take advantage of, all that kind of stuff. And then she does like a, you know, 90-minute interview with this person. They have a few other people that they pull around it, and we turn it into more of a like NPR style show where they have like her go through, connect all the dots so that the brand voice is clear. It's all like very, what's the word I'm looking for? It all makes sense. And then we produce that. And so the CEO spent two hours on it total. And they got like, you know, months of content that supports the brand voice, the strategy, everything they're trying to do. And by the way, it gets their CEO out there as a thought leader. So yeah. It's like, that's like one example of them just getting a little bit scrappy with the time, because that was a resource constraint.
The atomizing is like really, I feel like that's a drum I beat a lot with clients, is I'm like, listen, you could get your ex thought leader at your company, like pepper them with questions for an hour, hour and a half, whatever, record all of it. Now you've got the seeds of social posts, blog posts, you know, clips to go alongside it, all of that. I did that a lot at Help Scout, because Help Scout had so much talent on the team, and the founders were very, they were very humble. Like they didn't necessarily feel the need to like scream their genius out into the world, but they had it. And I was like, other people will benefit from hearing this. Yeah. And so, you know, one of them, you know, I think it was the head of engineering or the CTO co-founder, because there were three of them. He felt most comfortable. I would ask him, like, what makes you like, what, in what area, like, what makes you feel most comfortable having a conversation? And I would like record it sitting in an office, just having a conversation, but I would make sure the phone wasn't like super visible. It wasn't like front and center. And you know, I did that with other people too, is I just talked to like, find a way to get them to open up to me in a way that felt comfortable. And I was able to get a lot of their ideas out. And then of course our customers, our followers, like they loved it. And I couldn't have written that for them.
I think this is a big switch in mindset shift too, though, for like folks that feel responsible for content in the organization, content marketers or like heads of content. I feel like it is a switch from feeling responsible for content creation to feeling responsible for content facilitation. And I'm even moving it further into like personal brand facilitation. Yes. I just was on a call earlier today with the head of brand and content. And she was asking me that question of like, oh, if I add in my, like the people that have more bigger personal brands at my company into this like follower metric of like who's following our brand, does that mean then that I'm responsible at some point for the growth of their personal brands? And I'm like, yes, right? And I think that's a shift that is bigger than we, I think, are giving it credit for right now in the industry of like, if you have a brand and content team and you are thinking about who's the talent on this and who are the personal brands that we need to be elevating in our industry, you naturally then have to take over responsibility for facilitating, creating a strategy on how they're going to grow their personal brand and facilitating that. And that's a new style of work that I don't think that content and brand leaders have been thinking about yet.
No, well, and that's
not B2B anyway.
Not B2B. B2B. And Devin and I have had rants about this because I think that's what people are sleeping on right now. And there's fear around it. There's fear because they're like, well, what if this person leaves or they're going to build a side hustle and leave? And I'm like, good.
That's exactly that. But what if they stay?
What if they stay? And what we're seeing is like a lot of these people are staying while building a side hustle because it creates opportunity for themselves and their families in different ways. And oh, by the way, that also helps your brand because that becomes part of your brand story. And so I constantly think like, if you're not empowering one or two people on your team and empowering them by giving them the resources and the freedom to get their content out into the world. And by the way, that content can be part of your content strategy. So like you can meet with them and say, what are the things that you can talk about that fit our goals? Then help them do that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And then you get to know that like there's followers on their personal social channels that then when you have a marketing message or campaign that needs to go live, you have access to that full channel because you've also helped supported them in the growth of that channel. And so talking about relationship driven, it's like even internally you're building the relationship with those folks.
Well, also like, I feel like it's going to make me sound like a monster, but everywhere I've ever gone, there's been a legacy person there who the company felt had driven the brand, who like, you know, and there was something that happened where the person left. Like when I got to Help Scout, Greg Chiotti was this like legend. He'd grown the blog, like he'd made it, right? Like he was the blog. And I let him go. And it was like everybody was terrified because they're like, but Greg's legacy never ended. Mm-hmm. His legacy remained and continued to support the Animals blog in terms of not just the reputation, but what we learned through the success of his work there and how the things we took from that to continue after he left. And like Jimmy Daly, like when he, you know, and when Walter, made me CEO and Jimmy and him went to start Superpath, again, we were presented with this thing of like, Jimmy leaves this big hole, reputational hole in the business. Like, can we, you know, how do we survive this kind of? And the cool thing is there was more talent, Ryan Law, sitting there who had learned from Jimmy over the years, who had seen it, who was like, he was a mentor and he continued on that legacy for years and grew on it. So I think there is like, I've seen it over and over again, how a single person can't bring down a whole company or brand or reputation. And so I think, you know, in a way.
And we've already solved for that in terms of like legacy planning internally, right? This one person does this one job. Okay, well, then don't do that for your business. Make sure you're diversified enough that you understand that somebody could take over if that person decides to leave or retire or whatever. And so I think it's the same thing about external brand is just like you should have legacy planning, of course, if you're investing in it. But like, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. You just should make sure you're doing it in a way that's not going to, that you don't have as much anxiety if that person's going to leave.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that's true, and I don't know if people really want to admit this or not, but like your people matter more than your product forever and ever. Amen. And so it's like your people, your product can't talk about your brand in the way that your people can. And if you're hiring to core values, there really shouldn't be that much misalignment. And then the other thing is like, if you're a great leader, you're growing great leaders, you're growing the next wave. And so it's like, invest in your existing talent and then start to identify who's next. And so you can start to build that. And again, if we're talking affinity and long-term and all that kind of stuff, it's like literally people leave relationships. They don't leave like companies or products or whatever. And so it's like going back to building relationships and all that kind of stuff. It's like, the best thing that you can do with all the constraints and et cetera, is invest in your people. And if you invest in your people, you're investing in your content.
Yeah. But my, like the thing that I really like, my yes and to that is invest in your people, not your person. Because I've also seen everywhere I've gone, the depths at which favoritism or like, you know, somebody who maybe like made a big contribution and like you're still focused on that, but it's changed since then, and now they're kind of blocking progress. And it's like everyone kind of, you know, huddles around to, you know, please them, and then they lose sight of how it's impacting the company. And so, like, you know, for me at Animals, I was always looking for, you know, talent in multiple, like, who was showing, whose light was on.
Yeah.
And how can I, like, help them keep that, like, that light on? And, you know, Help Scout, what, you know, with parting ways with Greg, gave voice to two other people who didn't have it. Like, you know, they weren't able to, like, elevate with him there. And then they became the voices, and they were different, and they had their own, you know, Matt Patterson and Emily Triplett Lenz, like, they were kind of hidden, and then all of a sudden, right? And you saw them, and, you know, so, okay, so we should probably wrap up, because we're almost
there's any rapid fire questions. Go.
Yeah. I actually think we might have missed one. Let me just go back. Okay. Be authentic. Oh. Just be authentic. Be genuine.
Well, and don't focus on the outcome. Just be in the moment. Be present. And that's how you stay authentic, is like, there's nothing I need out of you other than to know you.
Yeah. Or, like, if you do, like, I think this is part of authenticity that gets missed a lot, which is, like, if you do have an objective, go in and be upfront about it and be like, hey, like, this is my new thing.
When I'm hoping you buy from me LinkedIn, like, after this call.
Just say, like, people respect that. This is, if you're in the business world, like, you know, people expect that. Like, I will send LinkedIn message, like, I am messaging you because I've stopped with the, like, how are you? What's up? I'm like, hi. I want to know that. Yeah. Because then it's like, I don't waste their time with like false, you know, like, niceties. I'm like, I might not care how you're doing. I might just want you to do something for me or talk to this person, you know, whatever. And so it's like, why not just, like, so yeah, I think the, like, that's one of those weird ones where it's like, just do it. Like, if you want
to. I also think that if you're, like, if you're a value aligned to your organization and you're interested in, like, the thing that you're, like, the product behind or the services or whatever, and you actually think it's something that, like, should exist in the world and is helpful for people, there's also a place in which you can decide to just relationship build with the people that you actually like. And so I think that that's this interesting thing of, like, you find yourself in a space that you like, you find yourself servicing or, like, or trying to build community with people that you would naturally want to. And I'm in that space now where I'm like, I get to just, like my, the folks that I consider, like, connectors that talk to a lot of founders and can introduce me to people, I only relationship build with the ones that I, like, actually want to be friends with, you know what I mean? And then it's, like, my friends that are also helpful that I can, like, have a good relationship with. And so I think the inauthenticity comes from a place where you have to force relationship building with somebody that you wouldn't naturally build a relationship with. And it's like, if you can find yourself whatever the variable is that you can fix, so you can be in a space where you're just naturally connecting with the types of people that you would want to connect with and learning from them and asking them questions and being curious. But I think the inauthenticity comes from, like, being in a space where, like, I don't want to talk to this person. I don't care about their problem. I don't care about what that is. I have to force it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's also, like, a lack of honesty is how I think about it. Like, being authentic is just being honest. And so, like, for Devin, like, being honest is like, hey, this is what I need out of this. Are we in or not? You know? Yeah. And so it's like, just go be that. And then remove yourself from the outcome.
It's their responsibility to say yes or no. It's your responsibility to ask clearly.
Yeah. And not waste their time.
No.
Awesome. This was cool. Rachel, am I okay? Because we don't usually do these live. And so I feel like I have a job I'm supposed to do. Like, is there something that you want to tell everybody? Like, is there a, like, am I supposed to put the business thing at the end here? Like, I don't know. You're the boss. So
I think just be Devin. I mean, we're all being authentic here. So just be you. Say what you want to say.
I feel like that's a song.
I think it is.
Say what you want to say.
Yeah.
Right?
That is definitely a song.
I can't figure it out right now, but yeah.
Devin and I will often think that we're talking about the same song and then go and sing it and have two different songs that have, like, similar lyrics. And we're like, how did I Why did I think that one? You thought that one.
Wasn't I singing one song and you were like, actually, that's Fleetwood Mac? And I was like, whoops.
No, you were singing it and you sung. It was, I think it was, and it was Fleetwood Mac, but you were singing it and it was all about like being seen or being free. And then you inserted a word that meant like the opposite. Like you thought the lyric was like different. I'm like, the whole song's about this one thing. Like, why would that word be the word that you thought?
Stop thinking about tomorrow. Because then I was like, because it'll soon be here or something. And you're like, that's not what they say. Anyway, we don't have to figure this out in front of a live audience who probably have better things to do. thank you all. Cuba. Sorry.
Yeah.
Jakob, I missed an opportunity to say your band name earlier. Cuba, thank you so much. Luke, love ya. Will, who I've never met before.
He's great.
Rachel knows. Hi, Will. Hi, Allie. Okay.
I know this was fun. We'll do more of these. I know every time we do it, we're like, this is fun. We'll do more of these. We are.
We actually are doing another one next week.
Yes. Oh yeah. Next week we're gonna do another one.
Hundo. I was supposed to make that event stand up yesterday and I forgot. So gonna do it today.
It's good. We gave this one a little breathing room before the next one.
Yeah, yeah. So but yeah, we have fun doing it. I think Rachel, we just need to like con you into doing this once a month with us because I just love doing these with you specifically.
You're right, Justin. It was very brave for Devin to sing that song live. I'm just kidding.
It was a pun. The beautiful voice
the
that I have.
The song was brave.
I have a voice for silent movies.
You have a voice for podcasting.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Love singing. Okay, y'all. Thank you so much. Hi, Will. Thank you for coming. I don't know. We'll see you at some point. And thanks for listening. And you know how to find us because we're here and you're watching us. So
your normal podcast outro. You're doing great. You're doing great.
Only some of you.
Yeah. You know who you are.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, y'all. That's a wrap. Thank you as always for listening.
We'll be back next week. And just remember, you're doing great. You're doing great.
30% of you are doing great. The rest, you got to get your shit together. Come on.
You know which side you're on this week.
You know.
You know. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.